This is continuing with John Finley on 14 August 1981. What I was going to say in closing, can you just describe in a couple minutes what the basic design fault was in the 140-foot from your point of view? Or was it a management thing, not a design thing?
Oh, no, that is quite clear.
Yeah.
There were basically many things that one would never do again in the 140-foot, but they would not have prevented it working, like making it polar-mounted. You can write a lot about that or say a lot about that. It was a silly decision, but not all that silly and not impossible. But the basic thing was just simply how to support the weight of that telescope in an engineeringly satisfactory manner. And the design was for it to rest all its 2,000 tons, as it does now, on a steel sphere, supported by a bearing of the oil pad, as we call it, mm-hmm. hydraulic bearing type.
Right.
Well, an oil pad bearing has to be precise. It mustn't, the oil thickness must remain good. The sphere was designed to be too small, and sorry, got that wrong way around. The sphere was designed to be too big. Just as a shell, and under the weight of the telescope, the sphere would deflect.
Oh, yes.
And that would hurt the performance of the bearing. But a secondary thing was the method of manufacturing the sphere was beyond the limit of any machine tool in the world, and it was going to be finally machined, turned there in Greenbank on a specially built lathe, you might call it,
yes.
using bearings. And that, plus the fact that it was deflecting, then forced them to put support, to design a supporting egg box structure inside the sphere. And that at that point, the Bliss Company decided, we cannot build this sphere. They were building it. And that
They had started,
and they were trying to weld the egg box structure inside the sphere. And every time they welded, they got the triaxial stresses built up, of course, because the egg box was doing this inside. And when they cooled, of course, the triaxial stresses were cracking the welds that were already made. And the project ended. I mean, I'm simplifying this,
but essentially,
with a letter from Bliss to AUI saying, we cannot build the sphere as it's designed.
So it was a very specific design fault, you're saying.
I prefer to call it a design stupidity, because it is combined. I'm quite sure nobody looked forward to the attempt to machine that thing to, I think it was 2/1000ths of an inch, a thing that I mean, one could do it, but
yes.
at Greenbank seemed idiot.
Yeah. yeah.
And the only thing basically that was changed in the design was to make the sphere smaller, make it solid, make it small for two reasons. It would go through the tunnels in its machine form, and we surveyed all the tunnels into Greenbank.
The railroad tunnels, yeah.
We measured those. It would go through the tunnels, and it was small enough to be machined, finally, I think it was Westinghouse, but the photographs in the book, on an existing thing.
After that,
the rest of the telescope is extremely close to Ned Ashton's original design.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the weight supporting in these tremendously thick walls and so forth.
All that is basically as it was. I think that's all written up by Max Moore, but
I was just interested in your opinion also. But the decision to have the equatorial mount is always puzzling to me in the sense that America has always been the leader in computers and transistor technology, and you would have thought that would have been made. But maybe the person that was doing the designing was not really into electronics. Is that the reason? Or?
No, that was the committee. The committee that was supervising the project. I sat in the meeting if it wasn't the final decision on that, the decision essentially had been taken. But the committee was still saying why. And the why was that nobody wished to risk the performance of a large astronomical telescope on the performance of a computer. And that is fantastic, isn't it?
Mm.
But it was that, don't forget, this must have been 1955 Kennedy had given them an Altair's design, and Jacob Felt had given them an Altair's design, and Ashton had given them a polar design,
But there still must have been nobody on the committee who was really knowledgeable about computers.
They did have a study made by MIT.
Really?
Which I think was favorable to the...
Yeah. Or now, of course, the other whole approach is to have some kind of access converter, which in this very same era was being designed at Parks.
That wouldn't do. Now, that I knew. And Hooghet had done it. And Parks had done it. And they'd both used the coordinate converter and both had achieved the same accuracy. But it was between 1 and 2 arc minutes. And the pointing requirement engraved on, you know, like Mary Queen of Scots on my heart, was 10 arc seconds.
Why pointing so precision. Small? Because...
These numbers were fixed, absolutely unchanged.
But what was the shortest operating wavelength?
Oh, no, it was all fitted, 3 centimeters.
It was 3 centimeters?
3 centimeters, and the beam width at 3 centimeters, we do this, don't we?
3 arc minutes.
3 arc minutes.
Yeah.
And we were going perhaps at 10 arc seconds a bit heavy, but 20 would have done. But
that's the fundamental reason that the coordinate...
That was it. Yeah. Now, I could have been in on that one. I mean, once I saw 10 arc seconds... And this is one of the things I've been through with Hooghet and with the Australians, where they're having gone there with Taffy Byrne, because I met him, was that nobody will make a mechanical coordinate converter to this accuracy. So that was it.
I see. Okay.
But I wasn't a computer expert at that time. In any case, the decision would be taken.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Okay,
those words are the truth. There's no facts as best I know them.
Finishes what I wanted. Did you have any other comments up to this stage? Great.
No, I hope you,
thank you very
can
much.
Manage with all that.
It's been very helpful. Okay, that ends the interview with John Finley on 14 August 1981.